Welcome to School and Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds, featuring prominent leaders, subject matter experts, and thought innovators with their perspectives on the current challenges facing K-12 education. I am your host, Larissa Napolitan, a former teacher, instructional coach, and a member of the Branching Minds team, here to lead conversations and to shine a light on phenomenal educators and those that are on a mission to transform our schools and the lives of students. Maybe you've been listening for a while, or this is your first episode. If you like what you hear, would you do us a favor by rating and reviewing us on iTunes? This is a fantastic way to tell us you enjoy what we are creating. Also, if you want more MTSS resources, sign up for our weekly newsletter using the link in our show notes and check out our website for all the blogs and guides you would ever need about MTSS. Education is filled with persistent myths that continue to influence the way we work. And today we're going to tackle one of those myths with the help of one of my favorite Branching Minds team members, Christina Solinger. Christina is one of our professional services managers, and she's a former school counselor. And now she's going to be our education myth buster with me. So let's dive in. Welcome, Christina.
Thank you. So happy to be here.
So today we're going to dig into that myth that some students just aren't academic. I'm sure that we all have maybe heard that or felt it from people, but it's one of those that still exists out there. So why do you think that belief still exists?
I mean, I hear that sentence, some students just aren't academic, and it literally sends shivers down my spine. That is a horrible myth. But it is true that we see that so often. And as a counselor, I see that in students with that idea of them believing, I'm just not academic. And it makes me, whenever I would hear a student say that to me, the first question that I would ask them back is, what is the voice that's telling you that in your head sound like? Who is that voice? And at first they would be like, oh, it's my own voice. And I'd say, it's not. Because students don't make that up out of nothing. That doesn't just appear, right? Same with adults. We don't just wake up and all of a sudden have all these negative thoughts about ourselves. All of those thoughts came to us from either explicit or implicit inputs that is defining that narrative in our head. So when I hear a teacher say, oh, that student's not academic, or a parent say, oh, my student just isn't academic, I'm like, we got to slow it down, because if you're saying that explicitly, think of all those implicit opportunities that student has also been told that same thing. So no, it's not true. There aren't academic and not academic students, but there definitely are students that believe I'm not academic. And there are teachers and educators that believe that about students, like, oh, they're just not really academic. And it's our job as educators to shut that down really quickly, because if they think that when they're in school, they're going to think that throughout their entire lives.
Yeah. Well, and I think it doesn't always, they don't always use the word, they're just not academic. They could use the words, they're not book smart, mm-hmm. or they're just not that kind of learner, or they have other talents that aren't reading and math or something like that. So there's other things that are said that maybe will imply that they're just not academic. And so I think that it's a persistent myth, you know, and sometimes in good intentions of like wanting the student to believe that they are talented in some way, or that every student is different, but denying the fact that they have the ability to learn.
Right. Yeah. And it's implicit, like implicit messaging too, like academic tracking.
Yes.
Right. We track students in, you know, advanced math and, I don't know, grade level math, whatever you want to call it. Any kid is perceiving that as smart kid math and dumb kid math. I did that. I was put in dumb kid math, and I believed that I wasn't a math person up until my master's degree, and I took a stats class and I crushed it, because I finally was like, oh, I know how to do math. I just know how to do it in a different way. I need to think about math in a statistics, human psychology way, and then I can succeed, yeah. Right? But that's an implicit message that I got, that so many students get. Other implicit messages too are, oh, I'm just going to pull you out of your math block every day, and that's when I'm going to do my counseling group with you. Right. That's implicitly telling a student too, like, you don't need that math instruction, or you're how would we say it? Like, oh, like that doesn't quite get you what you need. You're not successful in the class during that math block. So I'm just going to pull you out of that. Like, what is that teaching a student? That is me telling a student, I don't believe in your ability to access math right now. So I'm just going to take you out during that time every day. Like, those are those implicit ways that we perpetuate that idea for students and also for educators too. You know, oh, can you please take that student, you know, from 9 to 9:20 every day. And then you look at that calendar and that's their math block. Right. And it's like, well, how are we helping educators? I don't know. How are we helping educators understand like that? That's never going to help. That's not going to help that kid get better at math. I can teach you about that. But
well, I think too, this kind of plays into that idea that, you know, how are we enforcing or even like supporting the idea that students have growth? Like, because mm-hmm. I think that idea that students aren't academic is very fixed mindset, right? It's a fixed, you're born with this ability to be academic or to be, you know, book smart, or you're not, right? You don't have that ability to learn, which I think is such a super false narrative that is perpetuated if we don't have that kind of growth mindset. So how do you think that that growth mindset might reshape our understanding of what it means to be academic and maybe empower students to that might otherwise feel excluded?
Yeah, I mean, growth mindset, especially from a counselor perspective, is everything. Learning is a skill. Learning requires reps, right? It's like when I started running, I would run and it was really hard. And so then I'd be like, oh, well, I'm not a good runner, right? And so then I panic and I tell myself I'm not a good runner because running is hard. And then you realize like, no matter how good of a runner you are, the point is that it is hard. And once I was able to unlock that, I started liking running and I started liking the challenge of it. And learning is the exact same that, you know, especially for students, they kind of go throughout their life being naturally good at things until they hit that ceiling. And then all of a sudden something feels hard and then they panic. Same with adults, right? Like, oh, I'm working throughout my day and I'm really good at sending these emails. All of a sudden someone gives me a problem. I can't immediately solve it. And I panic and I like walk away. It's like, I don't know how to do that. And so learning takes reps. And that's what growth mindset is all about. When I was a counselor, I would teach kids about like rock brain versus slime brain. And I would do a counseling activity where we would make slime together, right? And when you have a rock brain, it's fixed. Like you were saying, that fixed mindset. I can't stretch. I can't grow at all because I'm convinced my brain should be as smart as it's ever going to be, right? But we need to flip from that fixed mindset, from that rock brain, into that stretchy, slimy brain, and that helping students understand like, no, you, that takes the skill to move from a rock brain to a stretchy brain and feel calm to learn and feel relaxed when learning is a growth mindset skill that we need to learn. And that's where educators also need to recognize when our students have that rock brain, when they're in that fixed mindset and they're panicked. And instead of just trying to teach them the skill, that the academic skill, we need to slow down and first teach them the skill of relaxing their body, positive self-talk, and getting their brain going and giving them those reps in order to be able for students to be able to even access the ability to learn and grow and use that stretchy brain. I used to have kids like come up to me and they'd be like, Miss S, like my brain was so stretchy, or they'd say slimy because we were doing that slime activity. And I'm like, that is what we need to be celebrating. We're not celebrating that they got the answer correct or, you know, or the output. We need to celebrate the stretching and the growing and the learning. And that is what that's what gives students the ability to learn and to grow. And then that's when we're all learners. That's when we're all academic.
Yeah. Well, and I think that idea that I love that your analogy about running. It actually made me think about how I used to think I was not athletic. I'm not an athletic person. And it took me a long time to learn how to be more coordinated. Like becoming more coordinated athletically took a lot of learning and it took a lot of stretching of my brain. And I had someone explain to me.
You had to literally do the reps.
literally. But kind of explain to me how your body learns the most efficient way to function, right? And that might mean bypassing some muscles. And so in order to maybe become more athletic or to become in better shape, I had to use those muscles that my body didn't, my body would bypass mm-hmm. to like find the most easiest way to function. Cause otherwise I could be injured if I tried to use them in some way. So I had to purposely go and use those muscles that were weaker to become mm-hmm. stronger. And so I always kind of think that with learning is sometimes there's parts of your brain, parts of learning that feel difficult at first because it's unpracticed or it's not something you're used to using. And so, you know, maybe the problem solving function or whatever. And so you have to kind of work a little harder to build that function of your brain. I mean, I'm not a brain scientist. That maybe totally falls, but in my analogy, it works. And so, but I think that that's just the idea that helping students understand, I like that slime mindset of really going, your brain is spongy. It's moldable. And kids have to believe that because they are like sponges and they have the ability to soak up so much information and learning, especially at a young age. And so I think it's hard to hear them when they're like, I can't do that. And, you know, I love that powerful statement of like, you can't yet. And right. I think adults have that, forget that as we get older, because we think we reach a point where we've learned everything we need to know mm-hmm. and we don't need to learn anything else. And so I think that sometimes we adopt that into kids of like, oh, they're coming in with all the abilities that they have ever have in life. Mm-hmm. And we have to use what they have and not mm-hmm. really believing that they can learn more. So, mm-hmm.
yeah. And how do we as educators reprogram our own brains to not just be reliant on that output as, you know, either you get the answer right or you get the answer wrong. And instead, if a student gets the answer wrong to something or we don't really like their approach, slowing down and finding opportunities in your day to help kids understand that it's not about the output, it's about the process.
Yes.
So, okay. You may have gotten that math problem wrong, or, you know, you may not have conjugated that verb correctly. Right. But tell me how you got to the answer that you got to. And that is showing students, and this is all ages. This isn't just elementary, you know, how powerful to say, hey, maybe your final answer wasn't exactly right, but I'm going to pour into you. And I want to know how you got to the answer that you got to. And then they're going to be, that is giving them more reps, that is giving their brain more time. And that's what builds that learner identity. Mm-hmm. Again, the growth mindset is all about like, what is my identity as a learner? It's not, I'm good at math. It's, I love learning about math. You know, I'm not like, oh, I'm a great reader. What does that mean? Right. I mean, really in education, being a great reader is, how fast can you read and how quickly can you comprehend reading? That's how we measure if you're a good reader or not. But we're all still reading, right?
Well, you know what? Even as someone who reads a lot, there are still times where I encounter a text that takes me more time mm-hmm. to understand and comprehend. And so, you know, I can't fault a student for when they encounter a text that has more complex words or complex mm-hmm. sentences. So I okay, totally so agree.
Here's my question for you. When you found that book and you started reading, what does it feel like in your body if your brain isn't quite comprehending it as quickly as other books? Like literally, what does that feel like in your body?
It's frustrating. It's also like, I feel like sometimes I read, but I don't comprehend it. Like I'm reading the words, but they don't make sense. And I have to go back and I'm sure listeners have encountered this. Maybe you're in grad school or whenever you encountered like a dense piece of text and you have to read it several times to really comprehend it. And you have to slow down. Like I think I get frustrated because I like to read things really quickly. And then mm-hmm. when it's hard, I have to slow down to comprehend it. It makes me frustrated. Mm-hmm. And so I like in my body, I think I just get more tense and like, mm-hmm. just like,
yeah. And then your brain is telling you, I imagine like, I'm not smart enough to read that. Or this is too hard for me right now. Like, I don't want to do this right now. It's yeah. hard.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes total sense. I think I like what you said just about helping students kind of understand the identity of, I like learning about math rather, because a lot of times I was a middle school English teacher and I get students that come in and go, I hate reading. And most of the time they said that because they had an experience that was frustrating to them and they were made to feel like, oh, I'm not a good reader. Right. So I'm going to hate this thing I'm not good at.
Right.
And so it,
That's a defense mechanism, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't like it. So I don't need to be good at it.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
And that, that confidence as a learner, like, is so important for the work of teaching, you know, because having students believe that they can learn something, right? Like, if I don't believe, if I didn't believe that I could become athletic, I probably would have given up like far more, far sooner. Mm-hmm. But I had to believe that. And it, for a while, I believed I couldn't. And I had like a trainer that like helped me, like, oh, you can do this. Mm-hmm. Like, it's gotta be hard, but you can do it. And like, you need someone that coaches you along the way. And so kind of to tear down some of those negative self-beliefs, I think mm-hmm. Is so important.
Yeah. Yeah. And they scaffolded that for you. And that's what we need to do in education too, right? Is say, yeah. This is going to be really hard. This, you can't do it yet. But how amazing is it going to feel a week from now when I check back in with you and you were able, you know, you've increased your weight, or, you know, to apply that to reading, your, not your weight, your, the weights that you're lifting, right? It's the same thing. But if you need someone to be reminding you along the way and noticing those small wins, and that's the systems that we need to build into place, is we're not just waiting until we get that, you know, that output to say, hey, did you learn it from last time to this time? Instead, how are we building in those systems to make sure as educators, I'm checking in and celebrating those small wins with that student so they understand, like, no, that's, my brain is stretching. It takes a long time for my brain to keep adapting and growing. So how are we making sure that we're supporting students along the way and showing them, like, you couldn't do that last week. I'm so proud of you. Hey, Miss S, look what this, you know, this student wasn't able to do that a week ago. Were they in your office and did they say, oh, I can't do that? Look, they did it. And having those conversations in front of students is what shows them and helps them build that learner identity. I don't care if what the total percentage of, you know, math problems that you got correct is. I don't care. Is it 1% higher than last time? Or did you show your work in a better way? Great. That's what I care about. And that's what builds that pride as a learner.
Yeah. We should have the PR, right? You know, runners always, did you beat your PR, your personal record? That idea, the PR for learning. There's something else you mentioned earlier, and I wanted to highlight it. You talked about how learning is much more about the process than the outcome. And I think that that is a sort of system-wide kind of idea of an education, right? Because there were so many things that are benchmark assessments and state assessments and all the things that we, you know, are student outcomes, are students growing? Are they meeting the mark? And I think that sometimes that gets in the way, the idea that learning is a process and really helping students understand, like, the learning process is part of the experience of school, not just whether they meet the desired outcomes. I mean, yes, that graduation and all that. Yeah. Important, but I just feel like sometimes we lose the magic of the process.
Yeah.
And I think that, to me, I mean, most teachers will talk about, right? Like the light bulb moment or when the student gets it. That's what drives a lot of educators to do the work, is because they enjoy watching students learn. But I think it's so easy to forget that because of those pressures of the outcomes.
Yeah. And those are pressures that are being put on the teachers.
Yeah.
Right. So if that pressure is being put on the teachers of, oh gosh, you know, my admin is looking at my test scores, which they have to, and we have to be looking at test scores, right? That's so valuable. That data is so valuable. But also, how are we empowering educators to release that pressure valve and trust the process themselves a little bit more?
Yeah.
There's, you know, one other thing that I would love doing with students, you know, because as a teacher, you have that idea of, gosh, I have to get this core instruction done because I need to teach these kids these skills. And if there's that one or those one or two students that are making it really hard for you to do that core instruction, you panic as an educator because you're like, gosh, I have to keep the class moving. But I have these two kids that are probably doing some kind of behavior because they don't believe that they're a learner. And so they're trying to do a behavior because that's their defense mechanism of, well, I don't want to fail at math, or I don't want to look stupid doing read aloud. So instead, I'm going to do this big behavior because then I know that teacher is going to call and then I'm going to get to leave. you can't blame the teacher for doing that, because teachers have so much pressure on them to be moving their entire group, right? To be building yeah. those skills. So one thing that I would always do is, you know, if a teacher is going to call and say, hey, I really need help with this student, I would coach the teacher to, instead of asking that student, like, do you need a break right now? Because that's that implicit, you know, that's a grown-up telling a student, like, do you need a break from learning because you're not able to learn right now? You know, instead I would shift that language and ask the teacher to say, do you need to go and do your math somewhere quieter, right? To what you're saying about learning styles, like, I'm still believing that you are capable of doing this learning, but maybe there's just something getting in the way right now. So then that student has the choice. One, they know they're not just going to get to go and play if they're taking yeah. a break. So then they have the choice. Do I want to try and access my learning here, or do I want to go somewhere else? And then I, as a counselor, would have work in my counseling space. Or I would say, yep, you can come and take a break with me. You have to bring your work. And then I'm sitting down with that student and we're doing that work together. Because then again, they are continuing to be told implicitly, like, no, you can do this. I'm not going to give you like a get out of jail free card, right? Like, you have a little different learning style. There's something getting in the way. You can't yeah. access that learning there. Great. We're going to do it here. Once we finish it, we're going to go back and I'm going to brag on you so hard. And I'm going to say, look at all of this academic work that student did. You know, we're going to do the academic work and then we're going to do some counseling activity, right? Like, I'm going to give you what you need emotionally as well. But yeah. if I just take kids out of the class and then say, like, oh, we're going to play a game, that is implicitly teaching that student that I, as an adult, don't believe they're capable of doing that work. So yeah. then they're going to say, oh, I can't do the work, right? So it's, the learning is happening no matter what space you're in all day long.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes in that kind of situation, the student's behavior is because they don't know how to ask for what they actually
always
need.
Always.
And because that student may need that individual attention mm-hmm. from a teacher, someone to sit down and support them when it gets hard, right? They need that somebody to run alongside them. But they're not going to get that in the classroom if the teacher's having to like help all the other right. students. Right. And so right. so they're going to misbehave, and then that causes a bigger issue. And, you know, and then the environment is not safe for anyone.
Right.
Learn,
right? And then no one's getting what they need.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Okay. This is, I love this kind of conversation because it really digs into, you know, how a myth like this perpetuate and impact so many different areas of students' experience, and even a classroom experience, the teacher's experience, and then even what leaders can kind of think about of how they support their teachers. You know, I think always communicating the idea that yes, these benchmark assessments, these state assessments, these are important things because we need to measure where students are at, but how to communicate to students and helping them set goals and have that growth mindset is how you approach it and how you talk about it is mm-hmm. so important, I think. Mm-hmm. So I would love to end on the note of what's something you think that leaders should communicate to their staff about this myth of students aren't academic? What's something you wish you had heard a leader say to a staff about this?
It's a really good question. That it's not a teacher's fault if they need to ask for help academically. I think we talk a lot about, oh, teachers need help with behavior, especially right now. Like, oh, the behaviors are getting so big in the classroom. The mental health needs are so big in the classroom. You know, and I would hear leaders, and I still hear leaders a lot of the time say, that's what we're all here for, right? You know, we talk about wraparound services, and a lot of the time they're related to behavior and mental health needs. And teachers, I think that perpetuates the myth too, that teachers are responsible for the academics. Our students are now demonstrating so many more academic needs than they used to as well. And I don't hear people talking about that. I hear us talking about the behavior needs are growing. The academic needs are growing too. How students access learning is getting more and more complex in an academic world. And I think teachers feel this pressure. I imagine teachers feel this pressure to be able to say, like, I got it. I got all the academic needs. it's okay if you don't. And I want to empower leaders to say, utilize your counselors, utilize your support staff. Let's create this culture of learning that no matter where they are in the day, those non-classroom teachers, those non-academic staff can work on academics alongside you. And I think teachers need to kind of have that burden taken off of themselves, that they are responsible for making sure that their students reach their academic data benchmarks, right? Like, yes, they are ultimately responsible for that, but it's a lot harder than it used to be. And I want to empower leaders to be able to also say, how can I as a leader make sure that I'm helping you advance your academic goals? We're at school to learn. Like that. Yeah. And you can create a learning environment that is also empowering for students emotionally. We're really missing the mark if we're just saying, I just need a kid to feel safe at school. I need a kid to feel safe at school. That's not where my goal ends. My goal ends with, I need a kid to be able to feel safe to learn at yeah. school. And until we as an entire school community are shifting that goalpost of, I just need the kid to feel safe at school. And we're shifting that to, I need them to have an identity as a learner. I need them to feel safe in themselves to be learners. We're never going to help kids get there. So yeah. That's maybe another myth, right? That's a whole other myth of like, kids need to feel more than safe at school. But it's like, we need to raise the bar for ourselves as educators too. Because if we're saying, I need a kid to feel safe at school, what we're really saying is, I need a kid to not be disruptive at school. That's a low bar.
Yeah.
Like that's a low bar that we're setting for students. I need them to not make my day chaos.
Yeah.
No, I need them to feel safe to learn. Yeah. And that's going to start down here, right? And then we're showing them that incremental progress. But I think that's to go back to that original question of, how do people identify themselves as not academic? It's, if no adult has set an academic goal for you.
Yeah.
Because I think getting back to that, about keeping them calm.
Yeah. I think getting back to that academic part of it is so key in like the purpose of having, you know, addressing the behavior and social emotional needs is so yes. that we support that they are learners and we want them to be able to learn and, mm-hmm. and be successful in that area and have that identity as a learner. And so, okay. Clearly, there's more myths that we're going to bust on the podcast over the summer, but this was a great start. And Christina, thank you so much for getting in here and diving into this topic. I know that
we
could probably talk for several more hours about this.
Yeah, I just gave you like five more myths. So good luck debunking those.
Thank you. Well, thanks for being here. And have a great day.
You too.
Thanks for listening to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branchy Minds. Go ahead and subscribe to our feed wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget, if you are enjoying our content, would you do us a favor and rate and review our podcasts on iTunes? This helps others find our podcasts and lets us know how much you love what we're creating. Branchy Minds is an educational technology company using learning sciences and technology to help districts effectively personalize learning through MTSS. To learn more about us, check out our website, branchyminds.com, or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn at Branchy Minds.